Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live with, of course, another wonderful guest today who has actually been here before. And it is Woody Weingarten, who is a lifelong journalist for various dailies and had his own publication in Florida. And last we spoke with Woody, he was talking about the, I don't know what you call it, but, you know, the duty of and the business of seeing his wife through cancer. And it led to what we now have, a book called Roller Coaster, How a Man Can Survive His Partner's Breast Cancer. But I'm going to ask you to go back a little bit and talk about the group that you led, and will you just, your turn.
Okay. The group I led was an outgrowth of my wife's breast cancer. It's called Marin Man to Man. I'm still leading it, actually, 20 years later.
Wonderful.
She is healthy and a survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason the book has the subtitle it does is because men, too, have to survive breast cancer of their wives.
And that calls on a lot to see your wife, your partner, your sweetheart sick.
Oh, yes.
And feel like you might be helpless, which apparently you're not.
Well, the roller coaster part of it is that there is almost a daily or an hourly up and down.
What is that like? What does that mean?
It means that as long as treatments are going on, you are under great tension.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know whether to talk or not talk. And basically, you are letting your partner, let's say partner because it's not only a wife, it could be a girlfriend or whatever. You're letting the partner call the shots because she is the one who has the life-threatening disease. Your universe is threatened, but your life is not threatened.
Mm-hmm.
So you're reactive rather than proactive, and for men that's difficult because men tend to want to fix everything.
Oh, yes, take charge.
Right,
uh-huh.
And you're not given that option a lot of times.
So where does that leave you emotionally? You want to fix
looking
something?
For support.
Oh, okay, good.
And
my
wife was smart enough to push me towards finding support through a group, and the group I joined is the one I'm now leading.
Oh, so you went first. Okay, so will you tell us what that group is and what it does, what you do in it?
The group meets weekly, and basically, the focus is breast cancer. We've expanded it to any life-threatening disease.
Nice.
And we have a man in there now who had breast cancer
mm-hmm.
himself, which is rare. But so the group is a little wider than when it started. But basically, we are a support group. There's no facilitator other than me, and I'm not a medical person. I've got 20 years' experience
mm-hmm.
with this. And there are several others with almost that amount of time. And what we do is we let a new person, a drop-in person, tell us his story.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will give feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had people drop in once, and we had one man who was a basket case, and he cried for an hour.
Yes.
And basically didn't want to come back because he didn't want to go through that.
It was too painful.
Emotional situation.
Did he ever come back?
No, but I talk to him on the phone occasionally
and
support him that way. And his wife is doing okay.
Okay.
We've had others whose wives have died.
Of course.
And we have one.
People tend to stay after their wives have died? Are they welcome to?
They're welcome to. We have one man in the group now whose wife died 3 years ago, and he's still coming almost
every week. And so what does he get out of it now?
Partially, he gets out of it the chance to still talk about the fact that he misses his wife.
Okay.
Partially, he gets the chance to talk to other men whose wives are terminal or in really bad shape.
Oh, so he can be okay. So he gets
he
gets a grief support, and he gets to help others.
Exactly.
Oh, so that's
And all of us who have been in it for a long time are being given the opportunity to give back. That's why we stay. There was a point in time where I was getting disgruntled because nobody had dropped in for
mm-hmm.
a while. And Nancy, my wife, said, why are you unhappy? And I told her, and she said, you're there because somebody may come
uh-huh.
in a couple of
uh-huh.
weeks or a couple of months.
Don't want that person to find no one there.
Right. And I went back
yes.
and with a different attitude. So she helped me.
Nice. Now, how do people know about this? I mean, is word what you do out, like, at oncology offices? And
It is. We have flyers. We have flyers in Marin. We've had people come in from the city. Mm-hmm. We've had people come as far as Castro Valley and the East mm-hmm. Bay, but mostly it's Marin. And there are flyers in not only the oncologist and radiologist offices, but also in the hospitals. And the cancer care units and stuff like that.
Now, do you want to say how people can find you if anybody's listening to this and needs you?
They can find the group online by Marin-Man-2-Man, and the 2 is T-O, .org. So it's marinmantoman.org. Mm-hmm. And that will have my phone number and other phone numbers there.
Now, when did you start to write the book, and when did you see you needed to? This is to reach more people with what you do, obviously, right?
I should never
say obviously.
Right. Yes. You say. Yes. Okay. The idea of this is to answer two questions at once. I started the book as therapy. I started it as a journal for myself, and I didn't intend to write a book. I didn't even think about that. And then as time went on, I realized I had material that was valuable, and more than that, I had experience that was valuable and would be valuable to other people as I was sharing it in the group, and thought it would be better and easier to share it through a book.
So I'm looking at this. It looks like it's really a biography of you.
And partially.
And then it slides. Tell us what it is, really.
Because it is a hybrid.
Yes,
because
it starts out
with my story and Nancy's story. It has sections with radiology and chemotherapy and surgery. It also has expository sections on drugs and research and where you can get help from, and there are sources of other books. This is, in 15 years, there have been 15 books written by men about breast cancer.
I didn't know that.
The 14 of them are out of date. This one is not.
Now, how does a book like that become out of date? Because of what you're saying, research and...
Yeah, because the drug situation and the research situation keeps changing. And it keeps going, bouncing back and forth, in fact.
From what to what?
Well, there's a study this week that said X is true, and the study next week will say X is false, Y is true. And the week after that, it goes back to X. And that happens in the medical
We see that in the newspapers a lot.
Correct.
Study shows. But how does a patient undergoing chemotherapy deal with this?
The first thing they do is listen to their oncologist.
Okay.
This is a supplementary thing, and it's not a end-all, be-all kind of thing. It is a guide. It is to give people a sense of what they will go through, not the exactitude.
Oh, sure. I just wondered how awful that must be for...
Yeah. Oh, it's terrifying because you don't know who to believe or what to believe.
Right.
You don't know what drugs
to take. And if you're getting the right...
Right. Uh-huh. And the patient, of course, is the final person to decide what is actually happening. If a woman is unsure, then she could come to this book. But there are other books for women. Mm-hmm. A man, meanwhile, is one step removed.
Okay.
And his wife is making the decisions, probably, mm-hmm. as it should be. And he's sort of what I call the invisible person.
Mm-hmm.
He's not really in the forefront. He's sort of in the background. And should be an ancillary person in the equation. This can give him a guide of where to go, what to do.
Well, can you talk about that? Like, what are the guiding points?
I'm going to dip into the book just
like
to read
that.
One
okay.
little section.
Please, you can do more than that.
And it's several items that I
okay.
of what I concocted, a meaningful list for others.
Good.
Says, patients sometimes prefer we listen in silence and squeeze their hand. Do just that. Get out of the way so help can pour in for friends, coworkers, and health pros, females in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Learn what it is our partners truly want. The truth usually can be obtained simply by asking. Gather data or act as an ancillary questioner, advocate, and note-taker, polar opposites of the customary male role as chief problem solver.
You can go back to that and explain that some more when you're done reading the rest of the points.
Okay, I'm going to skip through this.
Okay.
There are a lot of them. I'll just pick a couple. Pay attention to our own health and needs. which is every bit as imperative as a desire to care for our women. Figure out how to ward off verbal attacks from our partners stemming from their myriad fears and the sensation that they've lost control of their lives. Plan something positive for a treatment-free future, something we'll both look forward to, whether it's a big deal foreign trip or a little deal date for a neighborhood movie. And eliminate negativity and avoid naysayers.
I have two questions on that. How do you withstand the onslaught? And what is that like? I mean, I can understand being so upset that you've got to just scream at somebody. And you're not screaming at the person you're mad at.
No, you can't.
Right.
You can't. There aren't many no-nos, but that's one of them. The way you do it, the way I did it, is make sure that I would walk around the block or the house, get out of the house for 5 minutes or five.
What kind of onslaught would there be to you? I mean,
whatever it is that I was doing was wrong.
Okay. Like what?
Any little thing. Mm-hmm. If I would bring her tea, she wanted coffee.
Uh-huh.
You know, she needed...
That's important to know.
She needed a scapegoat. She needed somebody to vent her fear, her anger.
Yes.
In my wife's case, a lot of what she was experiencing emotionally, she could not express at that time. She has since expressed it. But at the time, she needed to cover that up. For her own sense of well-being.
In other words, the depth of her fears?
Right.
She couldn't...
Right. I was afraid she was going to die.
Of course.
She was afraid she was going to die, but never said that. I said it. I said it to a lot of people. And then I got over it.
Mm-hmm.
And part of my getting over it was the fact that I was able to say it, and in the group particularly. The doctors are...
So in retrospect, now that she's healthy... She talks about what it was like, not being able to say that, or when you say she's expressed it now?
To some degree. She has admitted a lot more of what went on for her than she had before. She is not my best reader. I say that because she doesn't want to relive it. So this is hard for her. She read it all over the book completely.
Mm-hmm.
There were things in there that she asked me to remove, which
mm-hmm.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
But the book is a totally honest book.
Mm-hmm.
And it says things she didn't want me to put in there. And
uh-huh.
it covers some of the difficulties we had in our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But most relationships survive this kind of situation,
mm-hmm.
90% of them.
That's nice.
So,
yes. You're saying once in a while there's a couple who can't withstand the pressure of being sick and they separate?
Yes. Yes.
Uh-huh. Does that usually come from a her or a him? Do you know?
I don't know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know. I know the statistic, and I don't usually use a lot of statistics.
Because that's a nice statistic, actually.
One of the things that I found out while I was researching this and writing it was that, and living it, in fact, was that statistics really don't matter except as a very broad guideline, because the individual is an individual.
Oh, yes, and because whatever the statistics are, you're 100% you.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And you're on some part of the bell curve, and you don't know what part that is until you've gone through whatever it is you're going through. So,
although I guess that could be comforting sometimes, statistics.
Yes and no. It depends mm-hmm. on how what they are and what the circumstances are. My wife was given a minuscule chance of having breast cancer when she first felt a lump.
Mm-hmm.
She was told it was somewhere between 5% and 15%, and obviously she had breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So the 85%.
What was the 5% that it? What did they say it might be? If not,
no. They said it probably would be benign or
I see.
Not anything to worry about. Obviously, she had something to worry about.
Yes, yes.
So statistics can be scary. Numbers can be scary.
Right.
If I said, for example, there are 250,000 women
mm-hmm.
who are diagnosed every year
mm-hmm.
With breast cancer, that's an astounding amount of people.
Yes.
And that is true. And that's one every 8 minutes.
My goodness, really?
No, excuse me. One every I've forgotten.
Oh, well, 250,000 a year, so 365 days a year. Y'all can do your own math. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
But those are just numbers. And when you are sick or you are caregiving, which is what this is all about, you then are concerned not about a number. You're concerned about a person.
Of course. Talk about the positive of planning a something for when your sweetheart is treatment-free.
In our case, what we planned was a trip to Greece, the Greek islands, and we went to two of the Greek islands, and we just took a vacation and rested, and we ate a lot of Greek salads, and we took some hikes.
So how far after treatment was over did you do that? I'm just curious.
A couple of months.
Oh, so you can do that right away. I mean, you can always plan for...
Yeah, yes. But as I said, you don't have to have that kind of a grandiose vacation. You can go to, if you're here on the Bay Area, you can go to Carmel. Or you can go
out to dinner.
You can go to Colma. It doesn't matter.
Yes, yes. Now, because what you're really saying is let's pick a time just to be you and me.
Exactly.
And that'll and will be our whole world.
And focus on positive as opposed to the negative. There's obviously a lot of negative stuff that goes on if somebody has cancer. And getting through it is a challenge, and the success of that is good, but it's not a permanent situation because cancer is a chronic disease. So you're always thinking about it afterward to some degree or other. Every annual mammogram, all the fears come back, and there's a relief every time it's over. My second chapter is called Relief, and that's the relief is multi-leveled.
The relief for you also.
Obviously, yes.
And how do you get from, I mean, I don't even know if you can answer this. How do you get from, I've never had any experience with this before, this had no part in my life, and suddenly you're faced with somebody who's sick, and you have to whip into action, or do you not whip in and it comes slowly?
No, that's not slowly. It's what I call a crash course in cancer college.
Okay.
And you start absorbing every piece of information online and books, podcasts, whatever, wherever you can find it, people who have it. And there's a risk in that because there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation.
I was going to ask you about that, especially online.
Yeah. And so you have to be very careful about what you're absorbing. And you will block a lot of that out as you go along. But you just keep absorbing all sorts of information, and I don't think you really stop to think about how you're getting the information. One thing will lead to another and lead to another as a domino effect.
And I'm sure that the hope would be you're going to find a piece of information that's going to say you're going to be okay.
Yes, but that becomes, as you go along, realistically, you know that's not exactly what happens. In my wife's case, she opted for, as most people do, Western medicine, the what they call slash burn. And
Read that phrase today.
Oh, it's a horrible phrase.
It is. Say it again.
It's cut, slash, poison, and burn.
Yes.
And the slash is a surgery, and that could be a mastectomy or it could be a lumpectomy.
Yeah,
doesn't matter. The poison is obviously the chemotherapy, and where the attendant problem is the loss of hair for women. It's a very big deal. And then finally, the radiation, the burn. And my wife is a redhead. She was terrified that she was going to really burn badly.
I see.
Because of her fair skin. Her doctor told her that she had treated an albino at one point, so Nancy was okay after that. A lot depends on the doctors, and most of them are looking to save the patient. They don't think about any of the other stuff. They don't deal with the hair loss particularly. They just mention it. They don't deal with the loss of sexuality because that is not infrequent. And that's not their focus. Their focus is to save the life.
Save the life, and you can deal with the rest of it between the two of you.
Exactly.
Yes.
Except
which makes
that it makes sense, except that, and at the time you are consumed with right. the life-saving part. And you don't think about the other. You don't, people don't think about insurance or costs of this. And it's a very high cost for the medications and all these treatments.
And insurance doesn't cover that. I think that's important to know about.
Insurance covers a good deal of it, but it also depends on the insurance. And I frankly don't know anything about whether Obamacare deals with this or not. I don't know.
That's very scary because whenever you get that bill, whether you get it when your wife has come through this or you get it after if somebody doesn't make it, if a partner dies,
right.
either way, it's horrible.
Right. At well into her recovery and into the two decades that we've lived after this thing so far, I got prostate cancer.
I remember that, yeah.
And what happened for me was, first of all, Nancy's cancer helped me get through my own.
How?
Well, I knew what she was going through, and so by remembering that, I was able to deal with most of what had happened. And so...
So that's up to you. I mean, that's hard to put you in a position while you're so sick to have to be the one to be reassuring also. But I'm sure that...
There are a lot of uncomfortable positions, but you learn... This is learned by doing, mostly.
Yeah.
And as I say, my book, Roller Coaster, is a guide.
Yes.
It is not a Bible. It's not...
Right.
The Bible for breast cancer is probably Dr. Susan Love's breast cancer book.
Oh.
That's a encyclopedic work. This is much more personal, this book, and it is something that will show men in particular how... they can survive their wife's
business. And I see this on this cover here where Roller Coaster, How a Man Can Survive His Partner's Breast Cancer. It's how and can are two really important words.
Right, right.
And I think the encouragement, because whenever you're in the middle of something horrible, somehow every moment is the whole universe.
Exactly.
It's very hard, I think, just even in small things, small painful things. When you're miserable, it doesn't seem like you can say, okay, that's going to end.
Everybody should buy the book.
Yes, okay.
According to the New York Times, there are 35 million caregivers in the United States. Not obviously people, all of them with life-threatening diseases, but 35 million. I only want to sell one copy per person.
You know?
And in fact, I use that.
How do we buy this?
You can buy it and you can order it through almost any bookstore. You can go through Amazon.
Okay, so independent bookstores are in. Yes.
Yeah, but you'd have to order it. It's not they're not stocking it, but you can order it and it'll come quickly.
Okay.
You can also look on my website, which is vitalitypress.com, and that's a blog basically, which will give you.
VitalityPress.com.
Right,
okay.
We'll give you some links. But
is this something, I've got an odd question. Sometimes you want to give something to a person who's suffering a time in life where he's called. Would this be an appropriate or not appropriate gift for somebody who's going through this?
It would be an appropriate gift. It would be a helpful gift. It would be a healing gift. And the individual may want no part of it.
That's what I'm asking.
It depends on the individual. Again, I can't say categorically everybody will benefit from this.
Yeah.
I believe everybody would benefit from it, but I don't know that everybody would want to read it.
Yes.
There are men in the group who will not read this book.
Oh, even though they're in the group
even
and they're not
they're
foreigners
the too. Because they do not want to go into the depth of, and I go into the depth of the problems as well as the solutions. So it depends on the individual and what they're looking for. It's that old cliche about when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Yes. Okay. So you could always ask, though, if you knew somebody in trouble in this way.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
Ask if they think they might benefit from it.
Yes.
It is a comparatively inexpensive book. So
because sometimes, you know, even though you might want something, the act of getting it is too much of an admission that you have the – crisis.
It depends on the individuals,
yes,
as I say. And both, when I say the individuals, it's both the patient and the caregiver.
Yes.
And you have to consider both.
I have one other comment question. you talk about, you know, this is chronic, this is always there. And do you want to say anything about, how do I phrase this, about accepting a new, living with a new reality in your life?
There is
things are not the same, but that doesn't mean you can't live with it.
There is a qualitative difference that happened after Nancy got breast cancer. First of all, there is an immediate new normal.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's right. Okay, a new normal.
And that keeps changing. So you have new normal and then a new normal and a new normal. And that will keep on going on as long as you are a human being and growing and, and accepting
adaptability is the key to survival.
But one thing that we have as a catchphrase that we use all the time, which is also a cliche, but we're living for today. Today is all that we have.
Yes.
And we know that, and we've lived that way now for 20 years, and we hope to live for another 20 years.
I mean, that would probably be a good guideline for all of us.
Yes, for all situations, but particularly when you have had a life-threatening disease, because you know that it can turn.
Mm-hmm.
We had a friend who had breast cancer and 12 and was fine. And then 12 years later, got a recurrence. And that's the big bugaboo, the recurrence. And she was dead within several months thereafter.
Yes.
And so there's always that fear underlying things. And that's probably the greatest fear for men in my group about recurrence. But we have had one guy in the group, his wife had two different breast cancers. And his comment, he's a baseball fan, a Giants fan. He said, "This is like having a doubleheader. We won the first game, we're going to win the second."
Oh, okay,
So much of it depends on attitude. And that knowing that today is what you have becomes part of a really good attitude.
Yes.
Because you can enjoy today. You can live richly, fully today.
That's important. I'm going to ask you, who gets your love letter today? Only because I always do.
The love letter goes to my wife, Nancy Fox, who is a marvelous person.
And you knew that when you first saw her when she was 16, right?
I did, yes. And we got pinned when I was in college. And then we separated and had separate families and got separate divorces. And,
oh, I forgot about that. And then we found each other
28 years later.
Wow.
And we've been together almost 30 years now, married, and it's wonderful, and it is an incredible relationship, and we do things like every morning we spend 10, we get up every morning and say, "I love you," and the other person responds, "I love you," not with a two, but "I love you."
Yes, oh, good.
And then we generally spend 10 minutes in intimacy, non-sexual, and we can do things that are silence. We can look at the sunrise. We can talk about anything as long as it's not argumentative. That's the only rule. And, for example, on Valentine's Day, we spent 10 minutes telling each other things we loved about each other.
Oh, and that
and
is
alternate.
And that is a love letter.
Oh, yes.
But any one of those moments on paper in your handwriting, stamped and mailed. I hope you do that.
Okay.
I mean, do you have something in particular that you want to say to her right now that you would include in a love letter?
I really don't. And the reason I don't is because we tell each other so often that we love each other that it's not that it's superfluous, but it isn't necessary to do that. That would be artificial, and ours is...
It isn't necessary, but think about this for just a minute, because I like it. Even to say, "I know we tell each other this all the time, I am just reiterating for the joy of putting it on paper and seeing it come out of my own pen."
I will do that, and I also...
And you can say all the same things, but your children... Never mind you. Long after we're all gone, those children and grandchildren, I'm going to make myself cry, are going to know what a legacy of strength and love they came from. I look at that.
I want to say one other thing.
Good paper, indelible ink. Okay, go ahead.
I'm going back to Roller Coaster.
Okay,
the book,
please.
On the cover, it says, it has the title, it has my byline, and then it says, A Memoir Chronicle, A Love Story.
Right.
A Guide to Research, Meds, and Health.
Yes.
This is my love letter.
Of course it is.
And I would also do the other.
Okay. Or just use that lovely blank page here for your stationery. I think books make great stationery. Look at all this blank paper. You've got three. Oh, you could write a love letter here, here, and here. Just on those blank, and then hand it. But for your children to find.
I hear you.
When they're old, for your grandchildren. Thank you so much for doing this with me.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
It's joyous to talk about the joyful possibilities.
Thank you
so much. Well, until next time, please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, every day is filled with occasions to write them, and writing a letter is a special occasion. So for now, until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye, and
Woody Weingarten saying goodbye, and thank you.
Thank you, Woody. Bye-bye.